thought for today. Pay no attention to criticism. Pay no attention to criticism. All of us could take a lesson from the weather. It pays no attention to criticism. You can cajole the weather, you can harangue the weather, you can argue with the weather. It just does its own wonderful thing. And it has integrity. It just goes about doing whatever it feels like doing within itself. Pay no attention to criticism and you'll be like the weather. You'll be like a person with integrity, a person who knows where you are going. Do you have the self-confidence? Do you have the self-awareness, the belief that what you do is right? Are you the creature of your bringing up? Are you the creature of your parents, of your family, of your lifestyle, of your community, of your church, of all those things that have been a very important part of your life? Are you really a part of that? Yes, you are. And there's no getting around it. Every time you pray, you say, let's pray. You want to put your hands together and fold them and say, oh God, outside of me. You've got this built into yourself so much. And you have to say to yourself, I'm God, God I am, I'm God, God I am, I'm God. Because the only God we'll ever know is the God that lives within us. And that's the one and only God. That God is everywhere, everything, and all that good stuff. But I am God, God I am. Now, you say that out loud, and the world is going to criticize you. The world is going to say, oh, no, no, you're not. So Jesus said, I'm the Son of God. He wasn't strong enough to say, I'm God. He said, Jesus wasn't strong enough to say, I'm God. He's one of the greatest beings that ever lived on the face of the earth. He wasn't strong enough to say, and you say it, and you think you're stronger than Jesus? No, I'm not. I just listen to the words of a teacher. I listen to the words of not only Jesus, but all the great teachers who say, God is within each one of us. Each of us is God. Each of us is all of God. God cannot be divided up into little segments. God cannot be divided up into little pieces. Wherever God is, all of God is present. And there's only one conclusion you can come to that, and that you are God. Each of us is God. Well, how can I be God, and you be God, and they be God, and we be God? Because God is universal. You see, it's not a matter of a splitting up God. It's not a matter of I am one God and you are another God and you are another God. We're each unique gods. We're not. There's only one God. There are people who say our uniqueness should be honored, but our uniqueness cannot be honored. Our uniqueness will fade away. It will disappear once we know who we are. Once we know that we're God, the uniqueness that we appear to be fades away. Well, darn, who wants the uniqueness to fade away? That's my individuality. When I die, I'd like to keep my individuality with it. Hey, hasn't anyone ever said to you, so to speak, when you die, you don't take it with you? You don't take anything from the human world with you. Your money, your relationships, your friendships, and you don't take your body with you. Now, you see, this is what humankind has chosen to do. They've chosen to die and leave behind everything that they are. Divine kind takes it with them. Well, how come some divine people left their body behind? How come Jesus left his body behind? If Jesus, anybody was divine, he sure was divine, and you're right. If anyone was divine, he sure was divine. But he wasn't divine. What? No. Jesus could have been divine, but Jesus was not divine because Jesus was what? He was a sharer and a teacher. And so long as he was a sharer and teacher, then he had to be with the people. He had to speak to the people on their level of understanding, even as I speak to you on your level of understanding, and even as you speak to yourself and others on your level of understanding. If we go around saying, I'm absolute, I'm absolute, I'm absolute, and nobody knows what it means, we're talking to the wind. But then we're talking to ourselves. And then there is nobody else around us. And we're living in that absolute consciousness, which is cool. But forget the human. When you enter into absolute awareness, when you enter into divine awareness, when you enter into divinity, the relative just fades away. It has no purpose, it has no meaning, it has no direction, it has nothing. The game is over when you enter into divine. Oh, well, that's another game. Yes, it's another game, but let's say it's the archetypal type of game. It's the first game. It's the game out of which all other games are played. It's our divine self. Well, why would anyone want to play anything less than their divine self? Why would anyone want to be anything other than their pure beingness? Good question, isn't it? Why would anyone want to be anything less than the magnificence that they are? Well, because it's fun. Why does a girl like to dress like a boy, or a boy like to dress like a girl? Why does a child like to dress like their mother or father? Why do things like that happen? Hey, they're not their mother or father, but they put their mommy's shoes on, their daddy's shoes on, their daddy's coat on. Now, are they saying that they're better than their daddy or they're better than their mommy? No. They're just playing the game. How many times have you got down on all fours and went ruff, 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 ruff to your puppy dog? And your dog says, come on, act like a human being. I'm the dog here. But the dog likes it anyhow because you're playing with him. He says, you'll never make a dog, but it's okay. I'll take you the way you are. If you want to roll on their back and scratch like I do and wiggle and have a good time, that's good. That's good. I'll roll right with you. You see, everybody plays the game with us. But a dog looks at us and says, you're human. I'm a dog. A dog does not think it is less because it's a dog. A human doesn't think it's less because it's not a dog. You see, these are wonderful things. Pay no attention to criticism. Someone says, you make a stupid dog. Nice, isn't it? I'm having fun. Hey, you make a good dog. You bark like Irene. When Irene barks, you think, where's the dog? You know? She's really got that down pat. Somebody else goes, hark, hark. You say, well, that's Herb. That's no dog. But you see, that's an art. That's an art to play these games, to train yourself to play these games and do them beautifully. And is Irene a dog? No, she's not a dog. She's a people. But she barks like a dog. Some other people can bark like a dog. Some people, meow, meow. And they can meow like a cat. I then just play games at it. But when people criticize, hey, you're no cat. You're right, but I have fun. I went out in the garage yesterday and I was petting the cats and they were letting me pet them. And they were looking over, I will deign to let your hand rub my back, you know. And then there was magic. And as long as I looked at her and talked at her, I could have my nose right up against hers. It was okay. But when I put my hand on her back, she says, I don't want to be under control of anything. I don't want to be under control. And so she just sort of gently moved away, not far. She still kept her nose with my nose, but she liked to be independent. Now, what am I trying to do? Make friends with a cat? No, I'm just pouring out my love on them. You'll never get friendly with a cat pouring out your love like that. Hey, that's what I am. That's who I am. Doesn't bother me. You see, they become your adversary when they criticize you. And the first thing we've learned to do is to agree with our adversary quickly. So when anyone makes an adversarial comment about you, says something that you're not a very good dog or cat, or you're not a very good people, or you're certainly not a good master. See? Okay. All the masters I know ended up being teachers. And the masters that I don't know because they're ascended or doing all these other things, and I don't see them anymore. Why? If you're a master, why don't you see another? That's the point. I'm not yet where they are. When I am where they are, I will see them, but I won't see any of you anymore. I won't see any of those who have not chosen to be the master anymore. Do you follow that? You see, we wonder why we cannot see a master right now. We do. We see everyone as a master on the level that we are a master, on the consciousness that we are. And when people complain about our mastership and things like that, then what's going on? What's going on? Well, they're just seeing us from their own point of view. They're seeing us from their own point of view and from their level. And their level may be higher than ours or different than ours. But we all see on the level that we are. Now, what level are you looking at the world? What level are you looking at life? How do you see the universe? Do you see the universe as a marvelous, magical place? Or do you see the universe as someplace yet to unfold? Think about it. Think about it very clearly. Do you want to be a master? Okay, that's foredrawn. Do you want to be a master teacher? It'd be fun, but not really. To be a master teacher means that you stay behind. It means that you cannot demonstrate all the things that you are. It means that you have to go slow. Because, like with Jonathan Livingston Seagull, the seagulls were learning, but you're the son of the great gull. And Jesus the Christ, oh, you're Jesus the Christ. I mean, we could never rise to the area that you are, to the magnificence that you are. Well, what did Jesus do that was so great? He healed a couple of people and raised a couple from the dead. Others have done that too, but what was it that was so great about him? What was so great about Jesus was that he had integrity, honest to God, he had integrity. He had integrity that really stood up. Do you understand that? He stood up for himself. He stood up for principle. He stood up before his disciples. He says, no, don't cut that guy's ear off. Live by the sword, die by the sword. Don't do that. And he sent his disciples out to preach and teach and heal and raise the dead. And they said, Master, we can't do that. He didn't object to his disciples calling him Master. But what did he object to? He objected to being called good. Because none but the divine is good from his point of view. And what does good mean? Good means acceptable, beneficial, desirable. And was he acceptable, beneficial, and desirable? The world thinks so, but he didn't think so. He knew he had a step to go. He knew he had chosen to be this Messiah. He chose to be this teacher. Now, be careful. Some of you are choosing to be the teacher. You're choosing to share with other people what you know. Shut up. Live what you know. The minute you open your mouth and start telling other people what you know, what you believe, you are a teacher. And you will be subject to everything a teacher is subject to. But the moment you can go through life and live it and shut up, don't say one thing to anybody about who and what you are. Just demonstrate to them by your life. Have you known people who demonstrated by their life that they were fabulous people, glorious people? And they never said a word about how they got that way. I was just born this way, happy guy, you know. They don't say, well, I read the book, The Art and Science of Holiness, or I read the Bible, or I'm a Christian, or I'm this. You see, a people, a person who lives what they believe, never, never, never tells you what they believe. They just live it. Now, that's tough. That's tough because we're saying to go out and preach and teach and heal because this is a school. Now, you can leave this school and you can go out and live it. And I will say, wow! But if you're going to go out and preach and teach and heal and raise the dead, then remember, you're not being a master. You are being a master teacher, a master sharer, but you're not being a master. You're not allowed to be a master. So long as you open your mouth, and opening your mouth means to tell others about it. So long as you open your mouth about who you are not a master. You're a teacher. So long as you can keep your mouth shut and go out into the world and live untouched in the world but not of it, so long as you can do that, wow! But if I'm out there living it and I see all these, you won't see any foolish things. When you go in the world, you will not see a foolish thing anywhere because you will not have eyes that can see it. If you leave here as a master aware being with your mouth sewn shut, so to speak, at least zippered shut, then you will go out into the world. All the world will look at you and say, that's a nice person. They seem to have put together. They're healthy. They're wealthy. They're friendly. They're self-confident. They're unconditionally loving. Ooh, what a beautiful thing. Unconditionally loving. They don't expect you to change in the slightest. They accept you just the way you are. And they only see in you. Ellen, what do they see in you?
What I am. What you are.
They only see in... Thank you, thank you, thank you. They only see... A master only sees in the world about him, or the world about her, another master. And what does the other master do? They're perfect. They're fabulous. They're wonderful. They're glorious. What does a teacher see? Someone who's struggling to be a master. And then the teacher works with him. But a master only sees him. Does a master see war? No. Does a master see unhappiness? No. Does it exist in a master's mind? No. Well, how can you say it doesn't exist in a master's mind when everything is and is? Yes. That's it. Everything is an is without judgment. Everything is an is without judgment. Now, if you see a wrestling match, and as they say, match, they match together two people of equal skill. That's what they're supposed to do. A soccer game, a soccer match, they match equal teams. They don't put a little team down here who can't do anything with a big team up here who does everything. You know that. They match the teams. In baseball, in football, in any game, golf. They call it a match. A match, a match, a match. Remember that. They match at the level of consciousness that each is. And you, you're here because you're meeting your match. You're meeting those who are just like you, who are ready to step into that evolved shoe. That evolved shoe. Are you ready to step into that evolved shoe? Are you ready to walk in the shoes of a master and have them be your own shoes? You see, you don't need to be here at the monastery. You don't need to be anywhere. You're here for training, reluctant training, I must say. But you're here for training, and perhaps you'll leave here shortly as an evolved being, fabulous. Perhaps you'll take a little longer. It doesn't matter. Maybe you like being a teacher. Some of you do like being a teacher, and that's why you're staying here longer. Because you like going out and telling people about this philosophy, telling people about these ideas, telling people the world is a wonderful place. Criticism falls off your back like water from a duck's back. It doesn't bother you at all. That's beautiful. If someone criticizes you, you agree with your adversary quickly and you say, oh, how can I say it better so that people will believe me, so that I'll be credible? He said, I should tell you how to be credible in something I don't believe you're saying is right. Yes. How should I say it so people will believe that I'm right? Well, stop saying that you're God. Well, everything is God. There's nothing that isn't God. How can I stop saying that that's the case when everything's God? Did you know anything that's not God? Did you know anything that God didn't create? No. I mean, they admit that. I mean, if they're going to play with the word God at all, then God must have some meaning. And if God has any meaning at all, it has the meaning of allness. You know? And so, when you agree with your adversary quickly, you defuse the adversary. You defuse the situation so it cannot explode. It explodes only in confusion. Not in knowledge and wisdom. Think of these things. Pay no attention to criticism. Criticism is just a little badge that you wear. Criticize me. What do the artists say? Tell me, please. But you don't have to. What do the artists say? Let's see what the morning paper says about how I did last night. One critic, one, maybe two, write in the newspaper of how they felt this artist did as performing artist. Now, did the audience applaud? Did they stand applauding? Did they shout, more, more, encore, encore? And then the critic says, nobody liked it. Well, now, where was he, you know? Where was that critic while the people were stammering for more attention? They said, wow, what a great performance. Now, who are they going to believe? Pay no attention to criticism. Criticism, in that respect, is one person's point of view. What is the majority of the world's point of view? What is your point of view? Did you give your best? And as the actor stood on stage, flowers were thrown up at him, but he had tears in his eyes. He did not stand there as a self-confident being. He stood there almost like a broken man. And he walked off the stage with his head hanging down, even though the audience still clamored, come back, you're great. And then the stage manager came out and said, thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You have been a very wonderful audience. And Mr. X gave a fabulous performance. But just before he went on, he was told that his mother had died. A woman that he had worshipped all of his life. And he had been very sad about her. And he didn't know that she was so bad and so sick because she kept it from him so that he would give these fine performances. And the audience understood. They saw two performances. They saw the performance of a master actor, a master thespian. And then they saw the performance of a devoted son. as it was. His son could have said, "Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your applause. I take it as a tribute to my mother who died this evening. My mother, who has been a delight and who has been supporting me throughout my career, and now I keep her in my memory as a lovely thing, and you have just made her memory all the more beautiful. Thank you so much." You see, if you carry yourself, if you walk wisely in your shoes, if you can present yourself, if you are a performer, and we all are, if you can present yourself in such a beautiful way that what you're trying to say is great, the criticism is as nothing. I will criticize you often, and I find it very difficult to find things to criticize of you, but I look, and I criticize you often, and if you are untouched by it, not, "Your opinion doesn't make any difference to me," that, not that kind of untouched, but "Thank you for your criticism. I will use it to be better." Or, "How do you think I can improve?" You see, you don't run from it. You let it be a blessing in your life. Criticism is not something that we pay attention to. It's the intent that stands with it that we pay attention to. Was the intent to improve us? Then let's be improved. Was the intent to belittle us? Then let's be improved. Don't be touched by it in any way other than what you want to be touched. And remember, you're the master. You're the creator of your world. You're the only one that matters. I'm number one, remember? When you leave this arena and you walk into some other arena, say in El Cajon, you're still number one. Everything circles around you. And you must be a respectful number one. You must be a self-confident number one. You must be a genius number one. Because that's who you are. And as you play this role, you will find that you are supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. You'll find that you're a happy person. You'll find that life is filled with joy. John told us that when he was a little boy, integrity was very important in their home, as it is in the homes of many of us. And to lie or cheat or steal in any way was just beyond conceiving that you would do such a thing. You just couldn't conceive of that. And so when something came up that indicated that we were withholding the truth, where were those false teeth? We were withholding the truth. We just had to speak up and take the medicine, whatever it was. And the medicine happened to be understanding, laughter, and taking care of the situation. You see, John didn't tell us what happened when he took the false teeth back to the man, or who got the false teeth back to the man, or whether the false teeth were what were sinking under the couch. He never told us that. But we were led to believe that that's what it was. We're led to believe that someone took those false teeth back to Mr. Blair, and somebody gave them to him and made him feel happy again. But we didn't get that part of the story. Perhaps that's in another issue of his morning talk. How the teeth got back to the gentleman who was talking with Dr. Teeth in his mouth and had a hard time. So, integrity is such a tremendous thing. And with integrity, criticism rolls off your back. Totally unimportant. Totally unimpressive to you. And you're the same beautiful, joyous, wonderful person you always were. I love you.